sometimes I find it in my daily life,
yes,
and in meditation sessions, that trying to be mindful is not getting me to live in the moment, but is a way, in the contrary, it's a way of escaping the moment.
Alright. Say a little bit more about that. Explain a little bit more.
I think it's especially in the moments when I'm full with emotions.
Yes.
And then it happens to me that I'm trying to go back to the breath. Go back, feel your body, feel your sensations.
Yes.
What do you feel now? Try to be mindful for what you feel now.
Yeah.
But I feel it's a way of escaping from the emotions that I don't like. And usually I see it after. I see it like in the time being, I'm thinking I'm trying to be mindful.
Yes.
And after, when I look back, I said, no, I wasn't mindful. I was like running away. Right. I was running away to the breath. I was running away.
Right.
And something that connects to it is something I felt after Goenka Vipassana. And he always emphasized equanimity, being equanimous and equanimous. And I remember there was a time that I practiced after the retreat, I practiced the Vipassana 2 hours a day, and I was in a relationship that I was overwhelmed with emotions. And I felt that looking back, I was practicing apathy and not equanimity.
Apathy.
Yeah. I felt it's something like it's very similar, and you can really fall into this trap of like thinking you're equanimous, thinking you're mindful.
Yeah.
But then when I look back, then I said, no, I was running away. I wasn't there at all.
Yeah, right. In terms of the Goenka course, there's quite a lot of people who have sat the Goenka, so they're quite interested in what you have to say. Did you do just like one retreat or one or two?
I did one Goenka course and another retreat.
Yeah, all right. So, if I'm right in saying, in that practice and that tradition, that on the 10-day Goenka course, that there's the first 3 days of concentration on the tip of the nose, and then on the fourth day, there's a long sit in the afternoon, and then one does sweeping from head to toes through the body, and one basically keeps sweeping. That's the method there. And that, in terms of the mindfulness and the effort, in this case, it could be regarded as an avoidance of emotional experiences, and by concentration on tip of the nose or sweeping through the body. Would you say, in teachings, instructions, and talks given here over these days, that you've heard the same message?
No. I think it is another message.
Oh, different. All right. Thank God for that. Tell us what the listening, I mean, whether it's, say, last night's talk or in daily instructions, what have you heard about what I said about feelings, deep feelings, emotions?
I think the purpose is just to be with the feeling.
All right.
And be in acceptance of it.
Okay, so it's one important aspect. In being with the feelings and the emotions, I think I referred mostly last night to sadness as one of those deep ones, and one or two others as well. Would you say the being with sounds to you like a message again of making an effort to be mindful of. Does it sound more likely to produce apathy, or what's the sense you get? Be honest, say anything you like.
No, I think it's less likely to be really experiencing apathy, or
yeah.
but I think it's still a thing that in daily life situations,
yes,
mm-hmm. it's very hard, and sometimes I'm so overwhelmed. I don't know what does it mean to be mindful in the moment.
Yeah, sure, of course. All right. So, obviously there are various levels of avoidance that can take place. Mm-hmm. One can have a lot of emotional things going on, and then be making endless pilgrimages to the shrine of the West, i.e. the refrigerator. Or one can climb into bed and pull the sleeping bag up to the neck, sheet over their head, and go to sleep for a day or two. It could be avoidance. One can, I suppose you have them in Israel, go down the pub and start drinking, or all sorts of things. Anything can be avoidance. Some people avoid going on a huge shopping spree and spending lots and lots of money. So there's level, that's all outer avoidance. So yes, being with the breath or going to the body, it could be an avoidance. It's not too far away, but mm-hmm. It could be an avoidance there. So here's a situation, you're with your girlfriend, and then there are emotional things going on there. In hindsight, that means looking back, what do you think for yourself, when lots of emotions are going on, is skillful, is practical and helpful? Never mind what we say, what would you say? When there's lots of emotions going on in the immediacy of life, and one doesn't want to avoid.
Maybe not to fear and not to escape the overwhelming
All right.
emotions.
So how about
not easy?
Yeah, of course. I know. I think things are easy. How about sitting right now?
Mm-hmm.
How's the feeling and emotional and as you sit on the stage?
Fear.
Yeah, with these. With these.
Much less stressful than I thought.
Oh, all right.
It is stressful.
Yeah, all right. So sometimes there's the thought beforehand, mm-hmm. it could be difficult or stressful. Initially, first few sentences, there was a little nervousness in the voice, which is easy
mm-hmm.
enough.
Yeah.
But now more and more less so there. So what does that tell you? About waves of emotional life arising and the stress and the fears that can go with it. What does this tiny little incident out of existence tell you?
Maybe that when I'm not too much occupied with my emotions, fears,
yeah.
when I'm not too much worried about them,
yes.
then they do exist, but they're not that terrible.
Yeah, all right.
They're not like a balloon that is
yeah.
good.
All right. All right. So I don't want to go into it too much, but just very briefly, in the relationship with your girlfriend, what was all the emotion about? If you want to say, you don't have to, people are listening.
It wasn't a girlfriend.
I wasn't a girlfriend.
No.
All right.
But it was...
Uh, You don't have to say, I don't want to put any pressure.
I think that the problem I felt was that there was a very good relationship,
yeah,
but many times the expectations of me were much greater than the reality.
Oh, all right.
And this was making
stress. All right. Okay. So we'll take one step back. When you were sitting over there, when did you decide that you're going to come and sit here? When did you think, I'm going to go and sit on the stage?
I was thinking about this yesterday.
All right.
From yesterday.
Okay.
And I think when I raised my hand, then I decided finally. But
all right.
Yes. I was coming here and going to go.
So it's a situation that there was, as you said before, some expectation of coming. There's some stress, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then sitting here and being here, much less than you expected.
Yes.
Yeah. Your contact or communication or connection or affection with regard to a woman, and the expectations were building up, but the reality was different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something in common. Expectations and the reality is different. So when are you going to spend the rest of your life in reality?
Yes, I would try to.
But if you try, like, remember what you said? What was that first sentence you said about when I try, I'm not in the moment or something? If there is expectations, you have nice warm communication with somebody, in this case she warms and warm and communicating back friendly, etc., then sometimes an impression is left, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, an impression is left, or perhaps it might develop into something more. But the other person may not even have a single thought, just enjoying the communication, has no sense of developing, expecting into something more close, more personal, more intimate. So the expectations are building up, it creates the pressure, and then the pressure creates a lot of emotional waves. What stopped you from asking her? She's an adult, why didn't she ask her, can I expect anything more than this? What stopped her? So you didn't...
No, nothing stopped. I don't think something stopped me.
No,
I don't know. It's hard to describe it, but
yeah, no, I appreciate.
More complicated.
Oh, no, everything's always more complicated. But questions can always be simple. Sometimes, as I say, it's very easy to have expectations. We talk about it enough. But sometimes they are building, and the other person may not have any idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is going on in the retreat all the time. This silence and all sorts of expectations are building up with regard to somebody else on the retreat. You know, some people have already decided on the retreat who they're going to marry and settle down with for the rest of their life. Really, it's like completely planned it out with this whole person, and the person has no idea. So how easily our mind builds up the expectation. And we haven't actually... The fear and the excitement and all of that can stop the actual asking, can't it?
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps one way when there is some expectation, either is to check it out with the reality, to your credit. You didn't just sit there with expectation, shall I go, shall I not go? You got up and you checked out the reality. And the reality says, hey, it's not so bad after all. You're looking more relaxed all the time. But sometimes a little bit when there's more kind of personal investment, you may have to check it out with the other person, might you? Mm-hmm. So where's the energy and the enthusiasm and the determination going to come from? If you just a little concerned that your expectations are building, and in the building they're getting out of touch, because that tends to lead to fear, disappointment, feeling let down, etc., and sometimes even blaming the other person. Mm-hmm. So when it begins to start, we need the reality check. How's your determination from today? Never mind the equanimity, never mind trying to sweep through the body, etc. Enough sweepers in the world already. More important, that reminds me, this hall is to be swept. We need some sweepers at tea time, I think. Somebody asked me, 7. And therefore the direct communication will make the difference. Mm-hmm. Because you could go through the body up and down, and as you say, it's a lot of effort. Yeah. So, eightfold path, put it into Dharma language. One is right mindfulness, and the other is right speech. Or in your case, right speech meaning a skillful speech. One aspect of that is, if there are expectations, you have a duty to check it with the other person quickly. The determination to do this is strong?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been nursing two aging parents for the past year or two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my question is about dying.
Mm-hmm.
And the faith systems that I know about dying are about a moment of death.
Yes.
Whatever happens afterwards. But what I am seeing is, I think, what is technically called a dementia.
Yes.
And I'm wondering where the soul or the spirit is in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Partly out of concern for my own dying process,
yes,
when it comes,
mm-hmm.
because I think many of us die in this way.
Yeah.
There is the personality that we know is no longer there. It has completely transformed.
Yeah. Your parents, what's the age of parents?
Both of my parents are in their mid-80s, and my mother is just beginning with the process of dementia, with loss of memory. My father is in a far worse state, and he had a stroke a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And he's been in a wheelchair ever since. He basically hasn't been out of the house, and he's been losing all his bodily capacities.
Yeah.
And basically, now there seems to be this organism that has taken over.
Yeah, that's, you're right.
And I look in his eyes, and I do not see a soul. There is...
No.
There is very little. It's as if the soul is diminishing gradually.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether there is any explanation about this horrible process.
It's difficult. There's, well, whether there's an explanation which can in any way be satisfying in this ending process of living, I'm not sure. Whether also any perceptions or views about the exhaustion of life and if that and what thereafter or whatever is helpful, I'm also not very sure about that either. And I mean, as you know, Kamal, in the tradition, Buddhist tradition, it has felt extremely, as a general principle, uncomfortable with the word soul. That's something that there is something in which goes out. It's regarded with great caution. So the mode of the language, just a little bit semantic here, changed a little bit. What one can say with the dying process is that the energy, life, and the vibration of life, and the pulse of life, and the conscious of life through the body gradually begins to weaken and diminish from the extremes in the body, i.e. eyes, top of the head, feet, hands, etc. So the consciousness, the energy, the vitality isn't running as easily and as freely. So there's a gradual slowing down. Because mind and body are in the same process together, that quite often the vitality is going out of the cells as well. And which we call Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever we do, but it's generally part of the same collective process. Sometimes one is ahead of the other, mind ahead of body in general way of looking. And there is just as you're picking up with your parents, it's not easy, but there is a gradual fading which takes place. That fading which takes place, for that us who have the faculty, what the Buddha calls the faculties, it's hard to know how much suffering there is in it. Sometimes it's more clear, sometimes it's less clear. So at that moment when you look at your parents in terms of the gradual declining of the faculties and mind-body faculties and the fading that takes place, usually from the extremes and gradually a fading. How would you view it? What's your general sense in terms of suffering that goes with it?
For my father, there is enormous pain, there is enormous fear.
Mm.
And my mother is rather terrified right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're different stories. But,
of course,
my mother is absolutely terrified by this loss of memory. And my father is, I think, exhausted, in pain, and scared out of his wits about dying.
It can be a very, 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 very hard road. In terms of their beliefs, religious or none, or little or nothing?
Religious. My father was like the gentleman yesterday. He thinks that he and his body are one and the same, and that there's nothing after his body is gone, that there is nothing beyond that.
No. And so it's the religion of the one life and extinction, is it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Makes it a little harder too. In your communications, given loss of memory, given the decline that's taking place, apart from the fears and the anxieties, are there any other responses that can come, which are healthy, which can be drawn on from them.
Healthy for them?
Yeah. That you pick up any signs or things which is other than fear, anxiety and terror.
Again, my mother is still very appreciative of the wonder of the world. She's walking and looking at flowers. And
yeah.
My father is communicating less and less. He's really just eating, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything, given that there are some religious feelings and sentiments there, is there anything out of religious life that could be a support, such as, you know, kind of rabbi would be obvious, sort of, but ceremonies, rituals, something which gives some sense of comfort and support through?
I think not, but may I
sort go on, of,
I think that my question is, I mean, I think my question is more about my concern for my own.
Yes, sure.
What this means for us.
Yeah.
In the aging process. Because if we are here practicing mindfulness and heartfulness,
yeah,
and if we can, it's not unlikely that, given the miracles of modern medicine,
yeah,
that we will end up in the same way.
Yeah.
What happens when we lose our capacity for mindfulness and heartfulness? I mean, does the organism overcome that? Does the organic life? Does the organic life? In respect of my father, there seems to be this organic life that is just clinging to the world.
Yeah, I agree. So I think your point is, I get the point, it's a very important one, that a person, maybe with your parents or others, lives their life with all the ups and downs that goes with it, and puts their energy and their effort and to all those things of life, the family life and the roles and etc., etc. And then the energy level and the conscious life begins to diminish. Therefore, as you point out, the mindfulness diminishes rapidly as well. And of course, being in a monastery, so we had a percentage of very old monks and have witnessed and watched this plenty of times through this process like you describe. What happens is that when the mindfulness begins to fade, and obviously mindfulness is not an ultimate thing, it's a practice thing or a conscious thing, what's left is the raw nature of the person, the raw way of being. If the life has been led with fear, worry, anxiety in the system, and that has been a feature of the life, when that conscious faculty fades away, the condition will go fall back on that. That's what it will fall back on. It's tragic, but that's the hard truth of it, when the mindfulness and the consciousness fades away. And therefore, if there has been clinging, possessiveness, identification, holding, etc., even a person who has lots of religious beliefs, that they'll fall back on that. If a person has lived wisely, has worked diligently on dissolving fear, grasping, holding, clinging, possessiveness, when the consciousness fades in the way, the light is going out of the eyes, the sound is going out of the ears, and usually with the faculties, eyes, ears, it's quite often one sense at a time which is diminishing. Then one will fall back on that which is more peaceful, more accommodating and more accepting. And I've seen that many times. in the monastery especially. So, you know, not only is all these practices about living, but it's also in fact a practice about dying, because we can't, and your parents and others are the living confirmation of it, can't rely on the mindfulness in this period. That's why one of my talks is deeper than mindfulness, and I think it's a very important point. The Buddha's made it very clear as well, that mindfulness, you know, requires an energy and a present and a here and now, etc. When it drops, where does it land? What lands? And that's where we are. And the Buddha said in his famous, one of his millions of famous one lines, better to live one day in wisdom than 100 years in ignorance. Because one day of wisdom may be just enough, that we can have certain trust, that we've really looked into clinging, holding, possessiveness, grasping, fear, terror and anxiety, really examined it, so that there is a confidence if the dementia sets in old age, if the Alzheimer's disease sets in, if the faculties begin to fade and I can hardly see, hear, smell, taste or touch or recognize what's around me. May it be there's enough grounding in the cell that one pours into, that there is a piece of being. When the process is underway, I should say, with your parents and many others as well, then of course it's very, very difficult, because the mindfulness is going or gone. But the fact, you know, there's always, even in the darkest situations like this, and that's why I asked about the rabbi or whatever, that somewhere, hopefully, there's something which can gain access to that place where, in this case, your father resides.
There has been, even lately, it's something actually that I learned from Stephen.
Yes.
I held his hand once, you know, I just held and stroked his hand. But, which is a very simple simple act. But it's this constant receding. It keeps on going on. The deterioration.
It will go on to the death. That's a fact. It isn't easy, because it's a little bit like the entrance into life, where the life force grows, and for some, in the very gradual, day by day, hour by hour, there's the gradual fading away, and so quite often, as you say, the son and the daughter, become the parent. And the parents become the children, because they become like babies. The past is fading from them, and that's why things, just as the first thing that's most important for any newborn baby is to be held. The only thing that matters for the baby is to be held. And similarly, in the fading away of life, because the last sense store to go is one of touch. That's the last. Therefore, it's so helpful and important that there is touch. It gives a sense of connection, and the connection will make the journey through. And for your father and your mother now, and certainly in the future, will be very, very important, because all the other senses are gradually fading.
Curious about is if the life force fades, as I understand it in Buddhist philosophy, there is no end to the life, or there is no end to the energy. So if this life force, it's very easy when somebody, it sounds funny, but it's almost easy when somebody has cancer and is still vital, has all their faculties around them, and they die. It's very painful, there might be a lot of suffering, but at least there was a full person.
Yeah.
until almost the last.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. But in this kind of process where really the life fades over a long, drawn-out process. And as I say, there's almost no spirit. There's almost no energy there. So what is then the philosophy about the continuation of this energy in the world?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The difficulty is, in looking in the way of time, that in looking at it, we look to the particular, which is problematic. In other words, we say, gosh, I knew my father and my mother, and they had lots of energy, they were doing lots of things, and etc., etc., with their hopes and fears, and ups and downs, etc., etc. And then the cellular life and the emotional, mental life began to fade. And it's hard to see in the fading away how, what happens in terms of life force or energy reborn. One looked at it in that way. But that's because we keep looking at the particular. And I think the most helpful, I find anyway, the most helpful analogy for this, that all that's going on is related and connected with everything else. What I mean by that is that here's this huge ocean of life, and the waves of life, sometimes they rush up, sometimes, you know, an accident or whatever, and it's just cut, just like that. Sometimes the wave fades away and just slowly just fades out of the ocean. But the currents of life in this great ocean of existence are still going on day by day. So it's moving and it's moving again. And therefore, in Dharma teachings, it's generally a sympathetic, open-minded way of looking in terms of the great ocean of life, and these currents are going on, and out of these currents of life come life. And so it doesn't matter whether it's an abrupt one, it doesn't matter whether it's a very clear one, or a sudden heart attack, or cancer, or dementia, or just living life consciously through to the very last breath. But as I explored a little bit yesterday and other times, if we go deeper into things, deeper into the ocean of existence, it seems like less. It doesn't feel like less. I am born and I am dying. I am in this. The deep interconnectedness going deeper, one kind of feels that one's, as we discussed in the group today, the original nature, which is the water. Water stays the same everywhere. Waves come and waves go. One knows one's in the water of existence. But as long as I'm a wave, boom. I go up, I live, I die. Oh my God. So long. Gradual or sudden, as far as death, even that very gradual and difficult. I mean, it's obviously very difficult for loved ones to have to witness this day by day. It's very, very difficult and very disturbing. But it's, in Buddhist language again, if the person, you know, is experiencing a lot of fear, worry, and anxiety, basically it's a kind of tragic, but kind of falling back on the unresolved karma. That means the unsatisfactory influences on the past, on the present. So when the consciousness fades, that becomes even more raw, more blatant, more obvious to others, and more difficult. But even with those anguishes that we see a person going through there, like everything else, it's still, they are waves within the wave. And therefore, to repeat the point a little bit, there are moments when that, the fear, the worry, the anxiety is not operating. It rises and it falls, even in the being, deep down with no mindfulness. The non-wave times, when there's contact, they're not in the usual mindfulness. Those matter a great deal. Still, the depth of the person, no matter how weak the faculties, in the deep, it still can get reached. We may not know why, but it certainly does. The depth can always be reached even if there's absolutely no mindfulness. And sometimes it travels through touch. The touch will just go much, will always can run much deeper than the worry, the fear, and the anxiety. And in the very moment of feeling touch, the person with dementia can feel assured in the moment. And it's gone straight, it's gone to something deep. If the person knew that depth, therefore deep in the ocean of life, that would be their natural home. They'd be home. And then the problem of passing in this world wouldn't be such a problem. So still your presence and possibly other ways and ritual and support and mountains and rivers of kindness, not one single drop of the water of kindness that you give to your parents will be wasted. Okay.
Thank you.
Not personal. If you could comment a little bit or tell us what it feels like or what it is to be liberated. I think that's the main thing, that we are talking always technique and
all right.
round,
sure.
I'm not putting the finger.
Pardon? Not what? But I didn't hear the last words.
Not putting the finger.
Not putting the finger. I see. You may not have any more luck asking the question either. If you look to yourself for a moment and your general experiences that are arising, would you like to say anything which you feel might be stopping your freedom? Would you like to say anything that might be stopping freedom? Stopping you feeling free? Anything that's going on in your life inwardly or outwardly that feels rather unfree?
Right now it's a little hard for me because I feel quite free.
All right, nice. All right, so sometimes...
I have to think of
it. No. Please, don't make an effort. Right. So sometimes we can look just in a general way at our life and we'll say, well, just at the present time, nothing comes to mind which makes me feel stuck.
For example, even though I enjoy my job, but it defines me to a certain place.
Yes.
So I am already not free because of my job.
All right. Sometimes, of course, it's the job, sometimes the relationship to it, the attitude to it, etc. But if I just take the latter point for a moment, we are experiencing our moments, our day, our hours, and we may look at our life in the moment and say, well, at the present time, I don't feel particularly stuck or trapped or blocked or frozen or caught up or whatever. And, you know, soft way or whatever, it feels, at the moment, I feel relatively free. And there aren't major issues which are pressing upon me. So sometimes in our day and in our awareness, there is some whisper of being free, of liberation. When we're unbothered, we don't feel trapped, we don't feel imprisoned, we don't feel locked up, we don't feel caged, we don't feel stuck, etc. And in that we have some sense, some feeling quite free at this time or this moment or in this day in our life. So you asked what the question about what liberation was concerned. It is concerned with that as the normality of daily life. That's what liberation is. So, in that, what will contribute? When in the moments when you feel quite free, how would you describe your inner responses? When you, in moments and times, hours, a day, when you feel quite free, quite untroubled, untrapped, unstuck, uncaught up in anything. How would you describe it when that's the quality of your inner experience?
I can give an example for lunchtime.
Lunchtime,
nice. After lunch, I was lying outside.
Yeah.
I didn't feel any worried. I felt the wind touching me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard all the sounds.
Yeah.
I felt it was perfect.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think about something that bothers me and I couldn't find it.
All right. Wonderful. All right. So sometimes the faculties, the receptivity is open, there's happiness inside, there's contentment inside, we're not demanding anything from anybody, nor from ourselves, the wind is blowing through the trees, it's a lovely day there, and there's genuinely a sense of freedom, which is there. And of course, wherever we are in the world, will just be seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and we can know in a short experience that the world really isn't the problem we think it to be, or we imagine it to be. And the proof of it is we're just seeing, just hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. And therefore the faculties can be there, and there's a genuine sense of freedom which is there, freedom amidst all this extraordinary diversity there.
I have a better example.
Better example, wonderful, carry on, tell us another.
Even though I had, not very lately, half a year ago, the freedom I feel is only for half a year. So let's say half a year ago, when it was very difficult, and I should have been scared or worried.
Yes.
And I couldn't feel any fear or scare.
No.
I wasn't scared.
No.
And I wasn't worried, and it wasn't normal.
No. Right. So again, it's a lovely and important example again, that sometimes there are genuine changes or shifts within, and that which we thought we might be afraid of, anxious about, we are not, and there is a freedom in this case from that at that time. And certainly when we're not living in fear and anxiety, we can respond to situations much more easily. So that the freedom gives the capacity to attend to things, to connect with things, or whatever. So sometimes in the pleasant, outside in the grass after lunch, sometimes in the face of the difficult, what could have produced some anxiety or fear didn't, and therefore some freedom is actually shining through. So, to use the traditional analogy, the sun always shines, regardless of whether clouds are passing by or not. Sun's nature is to shine, freedom shines there. And all the teachings, I said, are about knowing that through every day till the nature comes to take the last breath out of our body. That is liberation. And therefore may it be clear and well established to us in daily life, whatever, wherever, however we are, and then we know a truly liberated life, a truly free life, and with it will come the natural happiness that goes with it. And that's what is meant here in the Dharma and the teachings and practices here. So have I put my finger on it?
What you said now, you just talked about my experience.
Yeah. Well, actually, why would I want to talk about somebody else's in here?